The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
You're listening to UK Health Radio. Welcome to the Therapy Suite. I'm Duncan Ellison, a therapeutic counsellor with a focus on positive mental health. This week in the headlines, avatar therapy could be widely available in the UK soon, and are colds more prevalent in lonely people? These stories and more coming up. This week it's all about music therapy. Find out how it works. Listen to a mental health song released by students in the UK, and hear why good mental health is important for world-class musicians. So if good mental health matters to you, then this show is not to be missed. Join me, Duncan Ellison, as we open the doors to the Therapy Suite, only on UK Health Radio. Mental health news making the headlines this week. Defendants with learning disabilities and mental illnesses are repeatedly being failed by the criminal justice system in England and Wales, a report has revealed. About a quarter of adults are diagnosed with mental illnesses during their lifetime, and the proportion caught up in the criminal justice system is even higher. The report suggests such adults need to be more clearly identified and supported. If problems are not addressed, the fair trial rights of many defendants may be undermined. The report says mental health experts, not police officers, should identify people with mental ill health or learning disabilities. Among other recommendations, the report says specialist prosecutors should be appointed for each Crown Prosecution Service area to make charging decisions in such vulnerable cases. Magistrates' courts, youth courts and the Crown Court should have a dedicated mental health judge to deal with management of such cases. A new computer-based therapy is being tested in the UK. Avatar therapy reduces power of schizophrenia voices, according to a BBC News report. The headline is prompted by a study where people with schizophrenia received a new type of treatment to help them reduce the effects of auditory hallucinations. Symptoms of schizophrenia include hallucinations, confused thinking, and thoughts that are not based in reality. In a test, half of the participants were given conventional talking therapy sessions. The other half received a treatment which involved creating a computerized face to represent the voice they were hearing. The therapist then worked with the team to challenge the avatar in an attempt to reduce the influence it was having. This study was carried out by researchers from the King's College of London, University College London, and the University College of Manchester, and was funded by the Wellcome Trust. Two of the researchers have filed patents on the avatar system used in the research. Colds feel worse to lonely people, The Guardian reports. A US study where participants were infected with the cold virus found people who said they felt lonely also reported more severe symptoms, even though an objective measure of how bad the cold was didn't find the same association. The researchers investigated the effect of feeling lonely on self-reported symptoms of cold among 213 healthy participants aged between 18 and 55, who filled out questionnaires and were given nasal drops containing the common cold virus before staying in quarantine for 5 days. The results of the study reinforced the point that loneliness can have an impact on health outcomes. A 2013 study found social isolation was linked with an increased risk of death in older people. Finally, 2/3 of children referred for mental health care in England are not treated according to a children's charity. Data from 32 NHS trusts in England showed about 60% of under-18s who are referred to a child and adolescent mental health service by their GP are not receiving treatment, according to figures obtained by Spurgeon's Children's Charity. The number of under-18s admitted to A&E for self-harm has increased by 50% in 5 years, but outpatient treatment rates are falling, according to the charity. Self-harm admissions to A&E departments for younger people have increased for the seventh year running, according to figures from 59 A&E departments in England. The news comes after it emerged that children with anxiety and depression will be guaranteed treatment within 4 weeks in an effort to improve mental health care. But lack of NHS staff and funding means the plan cannot be fully introduced until 2021. Looking back at the news this week, we heard about a quarter of adults are diagnosed with mental illnesses during their lifetime, and the proportion caught up in the criminal justice system is even higher. They need to be more clearly identified and supported, a new report suggests. Fresh sentencing guidelines on mental health and vulnerability should be developed and a broader range of alternative punishments made available to sentencers to meet the needs of cases. According to the report, fresh sentencing guidelines on mental health and vulnerability should be developed and a broader range of alternative punishments made available to sentencers. It's an interesting one, that. Andrea Coomer, the Director of Justice, said the criminal justice system is not suitably designed to accommodate people with mental health or learning difficulties. There are still fundamental problems with the criminal justice system's response to vulnerability, and too few people receive reasonable adjustments to enable them to effectively participate in their defence. I found this quite surprising, to tell you the truth. I mean, to be honest, it's almost 2018, and we're still not able to identify or deal adequately with people with mental health issues. I find this astounding. She goes on to say, "We're impressed by the efforts being made to create an integrated criminal justice and mental health sector. We hope that this report will build on that and bring about change for some of the country's most vulnerable people. We know from a mental health perspective that many, many people are suffering. Many people who know that they're suffering and many people who don't. So it's a real surprise to me that the justice system in 2018 is not able to deal with criminals who are suffering with mental illnesses." Now, just having a mental illness doesn't make crime okay, but we do need to make sure that these people are treated in a dignified manner. Don't you think? Let me know your thoughts. At Duncan_Ellison on Twitter, or email me at duncan@thinkduncan.com. So talking about going into 2018 and hitting the future, how about this one? We heard in the news that trials have started on an avatar-based therapy that involved 150 people in the UK with schizophrenia. Now, this does sound exciting. The participants had schizophrenia or related psychosis conditions who experienced auditory hallucinations in the form of hearing voices. This is a widespread symptom in people who have schizophrenia, we know that. And after 12 weeks, the people in the avatar-based programme showed a greater improvement in their symptoms. But it's difficult to say how much of a difference this improvement would make to a person's daily life without further research. As I said, this sounds incredibly promising. At 24 weeks, however, there was no longer any greater benefit for the group having the avatar-based therapy compared to the control group, the ones that were receiving the talking-based therapy. But this is a promising piece of research into an innovative treatment nonetheless. The next step will be to see if the benefits are still found when the therapy is trialled in more people in more centres across the UK. Now, genetics account for almost 80% of a person's risk of developing schizophrenia, according to this new research. In the study, they looked at how often schizophrenia affected both twins in the pair, looking at identical and non-identical twins. While the findings suggest genes do play an important role in schizophrenia, this is only an estimate, and the true picture is likely to be more complicated. Environmental factors clearly still have an influence on whether the person actually develops schizophrenia or not. Now, some people might say it's controversial, some people might say it's pioneering. I say anything that helps people with mental health issues has to be a good thing, don't you think? Now, here's an interesting story for this time of year. We heard in the news that lonely people are more likely to suffer from the common cold. Research suggests that lonely people stand more chance of getting a cold than people who are surrounded by friends and family. A US study involved around 200 people who filled out questionnaires on loneliness and their social network. They were then given a common cold virus through nasal drops and were quarantined for the next 5 days in a hotel. The researchers looked at how those infected with the virus went on to report the symptoms. They found that those who scored highly on loneliness were more likely to report worse cold symptoms, but are actually no more likely to catch a cold. Size and diversity of a social network system did not seem to have an effect on perception of cold symptoms. Instead, it was the people's perception of whether or not they felt lonely that seemed more important when it came to the self-reported symptoms. So people may have lots of social contacts, but still feel socially and emotionally isolated from others. So this means people may have lots of friends on social media and social contacts, but they may still feel socially and emotionally isolated from others. That's an interesting one. Participants reported cold symptoms every day, including a runny nose, sneezing, sore throat, nasal congestion, headaches, chills and malaise at the beginning, and indeed over the 5 days in quarantine. The Jackson scoring system was used, where participants rate the severity of 8 symptoms over the past 24 hours. Also, somebody had the unenviable task of assessing the severity of each participant's cold by collecting, get this, and weighing any mucus that they produced. How do you put that on your CV? Lonely people reported more severe cold symptoms than less lonely people. These results remained even when accounting for confounders such as age, sex, education, income, marital status and body mass index. From the findings in this study, it seems that the quality of social relationships and the feelings of loneliness are more important than the quality of relationship and the social roles people play. A possible ironic consequence of the social networking age is that some people may have lots of friends via Facebook, Instagram and Twitter, but the lack of actual emotional engagement with others is actually having an adverse effect. So bear that in mind when you're having a bad day at work next week. Just think, you could be the person collecting somebody's snot from a cold therapy test. Sadly, we also heard about a children's charity which has released data showing 60% of young people referred to specialist care by GPs are sadly not receiving the treatment. The number of under-18s admitted to A&E for self-harm has increased by 50% in 5 years, but outpatient treatment rates are falling, according to the charity. Self-harm admissions to A&E departments for young people have increased for the 7th year running, according to figures from 59 A&E departments in England. At face value, that sounds really sad. 50% up on 5 years for people self-harming. Actually, younger people self-harming. The sharp increase in the number of under-18s admitted to hospital after poisoning, cutting, or believe it or not, hanging themselves, is more marked among girls. Although an increase has also been seen among boys. Barbara Keeley, MP in the UK, she's the Shadow Minister for Social Care and Mental Health, said, "There's a continual increase in A&E admissions for under-18s due to self-harm, and this was concerning." The figures were alarming, said Tom Madders, Campaigns Director for Young Minds. "We know from calls to our patients' helpline that far too many young people with mental health problems do not get the help they need, and far too often the right support is not available until they reach crisis point. We spoke a few weeks ago about body image, and we know that boys as well as girls are feeling under pressure by the media, the pictures that people see, the news stories. There's a body ideal that teens are, in their eyes, expected to look like. And that may well be a cause of that 50% increase. But also, social media. We heard about social media bullying a few weeks ago. Whilst we're able to connect with more people, sadly, bullying increases as well. I'm sure that's also prevalent in the numbers that we've heard this week. If there's anything we talk about here on the show that you'd like to comment on, or maybe you run an initiative to help young, vulnerable people, then let me know. I'd love to hear from you. It would be great to get your story on air and tell other people about the good work that you're doing. As you know, I'm always looking for interesting mental health stories. A few weeks ago, I had a message on Twitter from Liz, a student coach and mental health champion at the St. Lawrence Academy School in Scunthorpe. The message read like this: "Hi Duncan, I wonder if I could possibly email you a song through that our academy produced and wrote around mental health. It reached a phenomenal 22,000 people on Facebook. It's very powerful and is being played all over the country at events. Would love your feedback. Look forward to hearing from you, Liz." So Liz sent through the song, and I listened to it, and it was a moment that truly sent shivers down my spine. This is a school community breaking the stigma of mental health through an amazing song. And with that in mind, I couldn't pass the opportunity of not playing this on air. Have a listen to this and see what you think.
It's all about you, what you can do. Do what makes you smile. Always go that extra mile. As youth today, we need motivation. Keep calm, no panic station. So listen to this information.
I need a way out of this no man's land. Time to shout, I need a helping hand to get from where I've been to where I wanna go. Never could have seen that I'd sing so low. But now it's time to shout, I need a helping hand. Can you help me please? Take my hand up, set me free. I'm not all alone.
Don't be a fool, sleeping is cool, 8 hours at least, be ready for a feast, eat a rainbow, get ready to go. Don't keep your feelings bottled up, don't listen to the people who tell you to shut up. Express your feelings is the way to go. Even if the process is really slow.
I need a way out of this no man's land. Time to shout, we need a helping hand to get from where I've been to where I wanna go. Never could have seen that I'd sing so low. But now it's time to shout, I need a helping hand. Can you help me please? Take my hand, help set me free. You are not alone.
We may be different, but that's okay. We're all unique in different ways. If you try your best, you will achieve. Cause all you have to do is believe. If you accept who you are, then in life you'll go so far. Create the change so no more
fear. Wow. The message in that song is very evident. And don't forget, this is not a professionally produced record. It was put together by students at the St. Lawrence Academy in Scunthorpe here in the UK. If anyone wants to listen to this again, head over to my Twitter page where you'll find a link at Duncan_Ellison. Wise words on the way, music from Sly and the Family Stone still to come. And in this week's Toolbox Talk, I'll share some tips on personal music therapy. Since I started broadcasting on UK Health Radio, I've had a lot of messages of support from people suffering from a huge variety of issues. I've always said I want to promote a notion whereby mental health is normalised. Sadly, though, I think the point whereby mental health is no longer a stigma or a joke, it's still a long way off. If you do follow me on Twitter, you'll know that I view followers as a team, and I like to talk about this team effort a lot. Dealing with mental health issues is far easier as a collective as it is as an individual. So on this programme, I want to share with you different types of therapy. Now, I'm a counsellor, as you know. I'm an integrative counsellor, if you like. I pick and choose the best elements of the different theories and modalities to suit my clients as and when they need it. I'm also humanistic, which I've spoken about before, which means I work with the client to find their own solution, but also I believe in their ability to overcome what is holding them back and find a positive outcome through self-development. And when you say to people that you are a counsellor, they always mention the couch. People have a perception of what counselling is, or rather isn't. The fact remains, by and large, counselling is a relationship between a client and a therapist. In my practice, we try to make a clinical environment, well, not so clinical. We believe you must be comfortable and relaxed and be able to share your worries and thoughts. You may or may not be aware that I've been managing ME for the last 10 years. In my case, that's chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. I had a massive physical meltdown when I was 32. Since then, there are a lot of things that make me anxious, and we've spoken about this before. And these include noise, being close to large groups of people, but nothing makes me more anxious than being at a hospital. I had an appointment to see a consultant a few weeks ago, and the whole hospital environment panicked me. And I know it shouldn't. But the point I want to illustrate here is that the clinical environment of a hospital or seeing a doctor is way too sterile to feel comfortable, in my opinion anyway, which is why counsellors try to make their therapy rooms as inviting, warm and relaxed as we possibly can do. Therapy, as we've heard in previous shows, is not just about two people talking. Do you remember the benefits of weighted blankets last week? Or garden therapy for PTSD sufferers? We also heard from Dr. Val Hewitt from the Oxford College of Arts and Therapies. She discussed therapy through the medium of art. Therapy, I guess, could be whatever you want it to be, providing it is of benefit to the client. So this week, I'd like to focus on music therapy. Music therapy, as the name suggests, is a non-verbal approach to therapy. You can use regular instruments or more unusual items which may provide a sound which illustrates your feeling and mood. It is most certainly expressive. It can also be spiritual, emotional, social, and sometimes physical. As a therapeutic style, the aim is to help clients improve their health through several routes. And these may be cognitive function, motor skills, emotional development, and social skills. It is particularly successful where one-to-one relationship is difficult to establish, or difficult to maintain, or where the need to spiritually remove oneself, albeit for a short space of time, from a clinical setting is required. Music therapy comes in two different forms, active and receptive. In active therapy, the therapist and the client actively participate in creating music with instruments, their voice, or other objects. This allows for the client to be creative and expressive through the art of music. Receptive therapy takes place in a more relaxed setting, whereby the therapist plays or makes music to the client, who is free to draw, listen, or meditate. Receptive therapy takes place in a more relaxed setting where the therapist plays or makes music to the client, who is free to draw, listen, or meditate.
Music therapy is a form of psychological therapy which uses music and sound, along with talking, to help people to explore their emotional experiences and patterns of relating with others. Music can provide a vehicle to express and communicate something of what's going on internally, and to find helpful ways of working with these experiences and patterns. It can be particularly helpful for people who may have difficulty putting their thoughts and feelings into words. And it can also tap into an inner creativity and a resourcefulness, which can then help build resilience and promote recovery. Therapy, we use musical instruments that can be played without having any particular training or experience. So it's something that everyone can do. We always emphasise there is no right or wrong way of doing it. So we create our own music and we work with whatever happens. And the therapist will use his or her music to support clients to express themselves as freely as possible. Music therapy can be one-to-one or in a small group. The length of time someone comes to music therapy can vary, but it's likely to be between 20 and 60 sessions. We can work with people with a range of mental health diagnoses, and music therapy, along with the other arts therapies, might be particularly considered where people are finding it difficult to make use of purely talking therapies.
Fascinating stuff, I hope you'll agree. If you'd like to know more about music therapy, there is a wealth of information online. Have a look at www.bamt.org. That's the British Association for Music Therapy. Or have a rummage through YouTube. There are some really interesting videos. Music is such a fantastic tool to reach out to people. It brings people together. There is, however, an irony in that many musicians who you may have looked up to, who seemingly have the perfect lifestyle, have also suffered from mental ill health. And actually, that shouldn't come as too much of a surprise, as mental health issues are, as we know, common. But it's only recently that it is being normalised. And these musicians, people in the public eye, are now coming forward and expressing all about what they've been through. A few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of being introduced to Cyril Ibrahim. He's an international classical pianist. He's at the top of his game. The Daily Telegraph cited him as one of the most exciting pianists of his generation, and he was a BBC Radio 3 Young Artist of the Week. Having chatted with Cyril, positive mental health is a priority for him. As you can imagine, playing at such a high level brings an expectation. People pay a lot of money to listen to him play in some of the grandest venues around the world, and one wrong note can be a career changer. That is some responsibility. Nerves bring on anxiety, and as you will hear, he needs to be focused throughout a recital. So he turned to psychodynamic therapy to manage his nerves and clear his mind. Let's hear Cyril talk about his mental health and his relationship with music, and then we'll hear him play the piano, and it will become clear how good he really is. I'm not a big lover of classical music, but his talent blew me away.
Hello, Duncan. This is Cyril, and I'm very happy to be talking a little bit about my mental growth and health. I sincerely think that piano playing and music has changed my life and has helped me through some very, very difficult times. This is basically to do with the safety I felt and I feel with being behind a piano and practicing and learning music, and the process of actually internalizing and consolidating a piece of music is an extremely, extremely beautiful one, because one grows with a piece of music and one learns it, and when at some point one is really free. Now, I've gone through some very difficult piano technical stages, and I'm still learning how to be free with my arms and also, of course, my mind, which comes together. I wanted to speak a little bit about the two aspects here, the mind and the freedom in the mind and the freedom in the body, as in that they are absolutely intertwined, and these interlinked parts of our being need to be addressed separately in order to really, when they come together in playing, when they really cohere. The thing is that sometimes it's very easy to get too technical about piano playing, about what the body needs to do in order to project the sound. But the connection between the freedom in the mind and the freedom in the body is a very interesting one, because on stage, when one performs, there is also the audience, and when there is a moment, this doesn't happen all the time, but sometimes it does happen, when you feel that you've got the attention of the audience, and that is an amazing feeling. That feeling of sort of oneness and unity with the audience is basically what it's all about, in which you can actually take the attention and guide them basically through a piece of music and show them all these beautiful things. For me, this process is a continuous one, and I think that the bigger pieces one plays, the more technically demanding pieces one plays, the actually more freedom one needs in the mind. And what I mean with that is freedom in the mind, I mean actually silence and completely feeling relaxed in the body and in the mind gives us a possibility of being a true medium for the music. Actually, that's what it requires. The other thing I'd like to say is actually that what many people talk about as interpretation and their individuality in their playing, I sincerely believe that actually that is not entirely what many big artists have done. I always have felt them as being a medium between the composer and the audience, and that of course it's about the composer and it's actually about the piece of music, but when they're really silent in their mind, that something happens in the hall. I always refer to Maria João Pires, the Portuguese pianist, who for me is one of those true artists who really communicate something almost divine, actually, as in that she doesn't exist and something happens which is like indescribable. I have struggled a lot with different piano schools, and having moved a lot and having experienced lots of different piano schools and traditions, this has blurred my mind a little bit, and it has distracted me from truly sort of being free. I actually tried to play as what people wanted me to do and how people thought I should be playing, and therefore I didn't actually listen to my own mind, what I needed, and in my own body, what I needed to do to express, as in everybody's different, every body and every mind is different. We could all have different problems to deal with. And the idea of safety behind the piano is an extremely important one, in my opinion, because the safety I didn't always feel when I was growing up, I found in the piano. But I must say that also came with a bit of a problem, because I thought I was feeling certain things and I thought I was being free in my mind, but actually I wasn't. Now that I've released my first CD and it's going well, I feel that actually my body is freeing up and my mind is being much more safe, because I feel that I don't have to prove anything anymore in my playing. And that's quite an important issue, I think, in piano playing. That is that one is always concerned about the past, and we're always thinking about what other artists have done and other what composers have written, and that we have to be loyal to the text, which is absolutely true. But sort of letting all of this go is a very difficult process, I think, because of this traditional background we have in music. In classical music, especially. But the dream doesn't go away. there are many aspects involved in building an artistic knowledge, and of course physical possibilities, piano technique, and mental health is incredibly important. There are many actually records from big artists, big concert pianists who have followed a rigorous scheme in which they basically did psychoanalysis in order to free their mind, because once on stage you have to have an enormous concentration, and something interesting happens, which is you're always thinking about the present because you're in the moment, but you have to look ahead because you have to shape your phrases, and you look back as well. There is this sense of constant fluctuation in your playing whilst you're actually doing it. And then, of course, probably the most important thing is dealing with nerves, dealing with the pressure of having lots of people listening to you, and of course dealing with these nerves can be really difficult. Sometimes in the green room you think that you're the only one who's going through this absolute misery, and it's quite interesting actually. And of course it all comes down, I think it comes down to, for me at least, it comes down to preparation. How well am I prepared, and how well do I know the piece? And of course I have done my share of psychotherapy to sort of open my mind up and deal with issues we all have from our childhood and other parts in our life. And I think that's extremely interesting to actually deal with and to go through, as I think this is something which lots of artists go through at later stage in their life, because when one is young, sometimes we play on youthfulness. We think it's funny. Sometimes I think, oh, was I able to do that when I was so young? And I was sort of very relaxed about it. And when you get older, you start worrying about things and things come up, and other people don't have this problem. Other people are just so very natural and they don't seem to have that issue. Perhaps they do, but you don't hear about it.
If you'd like to find out more about Cyril, his website is www.cyril, that's C-Y-R-I-L-L, Ibrahim, IBRAHIM.com. That's CyrilIbrahim.com. I'll play another one of his recitals later on in the programme.
Some bottom so that the dancer just won't hide.
I'm yeah.
we move on, if you have a mental health story to tell, whether it's your journey or someone close to you, or if you run a mental health project, do get in touch, either on Twitter at Duncan_Ellison or email duncan@thinkduncan.com. This is UK Health Radio. Hello, my name's Duncan, and I'll be with you each week to put a new twist on mental health. If you like this show and want more, you can listen to all the different programmes UK Health Radio has to offer. You can choose the live play schedule or download your favourite music programmes on demand, wherever and whenever you need to. The NHS has embraced music therapy, which can only be a good thing. So in this week's Toolbox Talk, I'd like to focus a little more on how and why it's useful. Depression is usually treated with medication and psychiatric counselling. In a recent trial, people treated for depression with talking therapies were also given 20 one-hour music therapy sessions. During the sessions, they could play a mallet instrument, a percussion instrument, or an acoustic West African drum. After 3 months, patients receiving music therapy had a significantly greater improvement in their symptoms than those who had only received standard therapy. The results showed an improvement in mood, focus, and general well-being. Whilst this is a great result, it's debatable whether music therapy should be used as a standalone model, but rather as more of a complementary therapy alongside more mainstream talking therapies, and perhaps only once a therapeutic relationship is established. Again, what do you think about this? I'm just wondering whether you would feel comfortable with just music therapy at the start of a therapeutic journey. When counselling children, though, it could be said that music offers a better ability to develop a therapeutic relationship than, well, talking therapies. The connection music makes is arguably much easier to interpret, I guess through volume, definition, and tempo. The way in which music interacts with the brain is a complex one. The interesting nature of creating music or sound has been proven to be particularly useful for rehabilitation for patients who have suffered a stroke or early onset dementia. There is a few good videos circulating on Facebook at the moment. The first is of a carer who works with a dementia patient who is largely sedentary. But when he hears the piano playing, he can recall his days as a jazz musician. And the second video is of a patient with Parkinson's who is unable to walk unaided. Yet when his favourite music is played, he and his carer are able to dance freely. The subliminal nature of music should not be underestimated. Melodic intonation therapy, MIT, is a method used by music and speech therapists to help people with communication disorders caused by damage to the left hemisphere of the brain and possibly engaging the language-capable regions in the undamaged right hemisphere. This works by using common words and phrases, which are then turned into melodic phrases with the aim to develop common speech patterns. Whatever your views on music therapy, you cannot deny its place as a modern therapeutic tool. It can be successful as a one-to-one tool or in a group environment. Before we shut the doors to the therapy suite today, let's take a look at how you can enjoy music as a therapeutic tool for yourself. By actively listening to music, and this means consciously listening, not just hearing music, you occupy your brain and distract it from other thoughts. For full relaxation, try listening to meditation sounds or relaxing music. Set the volume at a comfortable level for you, neither too loud nor too quiet. Relax and concentrate on listening to the music. How about using music to overcome a fear? A good example of this is flying. Many people have certain anxieties about this, especially during takeoff and landing. Before you travel, condition yourself by playing a soothing or relaxing music piece a few weeks prior to your flight. When you are aboard the plane, play this music as a comforter. Music is also good for overcoming frustration. We've all been stuck in traffic. And think about how you feel when you're stuck in traffic and late for work or another appointment. It can be very, very frustrating. Try putting on some of your favourite music in the car. Turn the volume up and sing along. This can be a great way to alleviate the stress in such situations. Use music whilst you exercise. Exercise itself is a good stress reliever and can help your mind relax. Your endorphin levels, that's the anti-stress hormone, they increase whilst your cortisol, that's the stress hormone levels, decrease. Exercising to music can help take your mind away from the fact that you are exercising, especially if you find it boring or, like me, physically hard. So you actually get a better physical workout. Pick music with a beat that matches the rhythm of your exercise. If you concentrate on the music, your body will slip into a rhythm and you'll achieve your goals much more easily. It's almost time to close the doors on the therapy suite for another week. Thanks for joining me. I look forward to your company again. And don't forget to tell your friends, family and colleagues about UK Health Radio. And if you have a story or initiative you'd like to share on the therapy suite, head over to Twitter and like my page at Duncan Ellison and send over a message. Let's finish with the amazingly talented Cyril Ibrahim. But before we do, here's this week's wise words. They're called self-worth and self-esteem for a reason. We can't let others decide what we are worth. That's dangerous. Empower yourself. Don't forget, if you do have any mental health concerns or have been affected by anything raised on today's programme, please consult your GP or find a counselling service to talk to. You've been listening to The Therapy Suite with me, Duncan Ellison, only on UK Health Radio. Stay well and keep smiling. See you next time.